All right.
I simply saw an email that said there was one, but I have not seen an email since then.
Inside the gate was it?
It just simply said, I didn't even know it was inside the gate. They just said along the gate. It was, I think, the email that I saw, but I didn't see anything other than that.
First lady, anyone in that office moved since there was such a lockdown situation in the front?
I can check, but nobody apprised me of that before it came over. I assume, is it all clear? They got the email and read it, I didn't.
Thank you, Robert. Leader Boehner said the administration has got to release an exit strategy for General Motors. Does the president have an exit strategy? And I know he described these principles that he's going to follow during restructuring.
Right.
But is there a timeline for Washington to get out of Detroit for good?
Well, Phil, as you know, the president has made a series of difficult decisions that lead us to the point where we are now. And as he has said on many occasions, he doesn't desire to hold a significant share of or run on a day-to-day basis an auto company. But he does believe that the investment that we're making is structured in what is in the best interest of taxpayers, and that we'll get out of this equity as quickly as possible in order to protect the investment that taxpayers have made. I don't know that there's a specific timeline, but Phil, let me broaden a little bit, because, and I did this a little on Friday, but you basically had several different pathways here. On one side, you had a bankruptcy that largely would have resulted in a liquidation, probably 60,000, 70,000 direct jobs lost, not including suppliers or things like that. Obviously would have had a dramatic economic devastation in the Midwest region and throughout the country. I think another side of this was simply to continue pouring money in to a company that you knew wasn't acting in any viable way. The president decided on a different path that I think made some real concessions in restructuring the company. You'll have a company after about a 60 or 90 day bankruptcy that will emerge without a balance sheet loaded down with debt. A restructured company that the task force and the president believe can be profitable while selling in a scenario that sells far fewer cars than what it would take to break even at this point. So the president is certainly anxious to get out of this business, but at the same time, he made a series of tough decisions to save off something that I think would have been far more economically devastating.
But there is no exit strategy.
Well, no. I can start all over again. There is an exit strategy. It's to get this company viable. It's to get the economy strengthened so that GM is producing cars that people want to buy, that Americans have the income to buy those cars, to do so in a restructured way that allows them to be profitable more quickly. And then, in order to protect the investment that taxpayers have made, we'd get out of any involvement in the company. That's the exit plan. Yep. Yes, ma'am.
I wanted to zero in on the president's pledge to be hands-off when it comes to the day-to-day management of the company. And
yep.
You said the same thing from the podium, but a lot of people are very skeptical that Washington will really be able to resist the temptation to be hands-off. There's a lot of decisions that will come up that are politically sensitive on Capitol Hill and elsewhere, such as which plants are going to close, types of things.
Well, a lot of those decisions are being made right now. Those decisions are being made by the companies. The dealership structure, those are decisions that are being made by the companies.
But down the road, there may be other decisions that have to be made, and dealerships and plants and things like that.
Let me interrupt you for a second. I don't think many people ever thought that we could get to this point of restructuring, in all honesty. I think if you take a look at what was set up by some in Congress in November and December, when the very first discussions were going on about bridge loans for to cover the operating costs for a fixed period of time while GM made some restructuring, I think if you look at some of the standards that were laid out, the restructuring, the auto task force has far exceeded what anybody thought was possible in restructuring. This is a company that will emerge from bankruptcy in 60 to 90 days with no debt. Whereas people were saying, well, it'd be nice to have, if we could, you know, get to some place that reduced the debt by maybe half. You've got a company that has, I think, a real chance to emerge viable based on some of the tough decisions that have been required. And I think a lot of those decisions have been made without politics in mind.
But if lawmakers decide they do want to interfere with decisions such as the mix of vehicles and things like that, you can't prevent them from passing a law. What are the safeguards?
Well, but I think you're now into a little bit of a different question. What if Congress acts to...
It's about interference and meddling in the day-to-day operations. And
but let me make sure that I understand your question. Are you talking about if Congress does that or if...
If Congress does that as well as if Congress asks you to do it.
I think it would be unhelpful to get into a hypothetical on what we would do based on a bill that Congress might pass asking us to do something. I think that's a few too many leaps for me to go into. I can simply say that we will work on core governance issues. I think one of the ways to get to a viable company as quickly as possible is working on a board of directors and a serious and stable management structure that moves this company quickly through bankruptcy and quickly to viability. I think those are the type of core issues that are important as we protect the investment of taxpayers, while at the same time, as the president has said, as the task force has said, and lastly, as I have said, not involved in the meddling decisions on a day-to-day basis. That's never been and isn't our desire.
Just to probe a little further on the White House and the administration's how much you're going to be involved in the day-to-day operations of the company. If General Motors wants to manufacture a car that your auto task force, whether it's Ratner or Dietz or whoever, thinks is not going to be a car that's going to sell very well, are you going to stop General Motors from manufacturing that car?
Well, Jake, we don't make those determinations. Those aren't, we're not, Brian Deese isn't picking out Chevy Malibu's colors for next year.
I'm not talking about their colors for next year. You said that the point is, the exit strategy is to make the company viable,
right.
So the GM is making cars that people want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
So are you going to be involved in?
No, we will be involved in corporate governance decisions such as setting up a board of directors that is going to make those business decisions based on how to get the company to profitability. That's what each company, that's what the board of directors and the CEOs and the managers and the workers of every company want to be involved in, is a viable, strong, profitable company. I don't want to confuse this, obviously Congress and the executive branch have always been involved in some decisions. And again, I don't want to commingle these issues, but I am separating to some degree. 2 years ago, Congress set fuel mileage standards that go through model 2016. Okay? Those have been established. I've seen reports that said, the auto task force may decide that, you know, it's time to build, you know, these tiny little cars that go 40 miles an hour, blah, blah, blah. Congress has always exercised its purview to set, for instance, corporate average fuel economy standards. That's, I know, not what you're talking about, but I am sort of separating some of those issues so that we're not in the midst of confusing them.
Right. No, I guess my point is, Fritz Anderson said today that the standard is going to be that they're going to try to build in for their new lines of cars, mm-hmm. and trucks, ones that are outstanding that people want to buy, which came as a surprise to me that this was some new idea for an auto manufacturer, the idea that they were trying to come up with something that consumers actually would like to purchase. What reason do you have for confidence that United Automakers, the people who have been running these companies, are going to be able to come up with something that Americans are going to want to buy, mm-hmm. and therefore this $30 to $50 billion investment
right.
is going to pay off.
Well, look, I think you have seen over the course of several years an auto industry that has seen, regardless of economic conditions, a fairly dramatic decrease in its auto sales. Not the least of which is because some of they've, you know, you've seen the reports.
And they kept on making Hummers, and they kept on making junky cars that nobody wanted to buy.
Well, I think part of the restructuring ultimately is that the auto task force forced some decisions that I think in many ways some of these companies have been putting off for years. You know, the auto companies have dropped brands. We've all seen that, you know, whereas some people, you know, different companies are marketing only a few different models and using a fixed number of advertising dollars to push them, whereas some of the American auto companies have had 10 or 12 different models. You know, you've seen different companies that have the same car, literally the same car under different names in several different manufacturers, which hasn't made a lot of sense. Obviously, I think, again, one of the things that's been done is there's a fundamental restructure.
You're proving my point. It's not like Fritz Henderson just walked in, you know, from another company. I mean, what makes you think that this investment is going to pay off? Just because they've learned the lesson now?
I think in many ways their previous business model had them very locked in. I think you've all seen the reports today of the serious amount of debt that GM was carrying, right?
Yeah.
When you're losing that kind of money, it's hard to undergo some fundamental restructuring without making some very fundamental decisions. I think it's pretty clear that the companies have, in many instances, decided that they've got to produce different cars. Some of those are coming on in later model years. There are things like the Chevy Volt that I think people believe, based on the high price of gas, based on consciousness about our dependence on foreign oil, can create different markets. But I think that fundamentally what has happened is a company is free now to make fundamentally different decisions. Yes, ma'am.
Robert, have you defined the criteria for the board of directors?
Not that I know of, but I can check on that. I don't know if there's been a strict delineation.
No. Some overriding principles for these people, because they will be key.
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, look, I think you want a group of people that have been very successful in the businesses that they've run. That have some experience in running companies and understand what it means to undergo fundamental restructuring, to operate in a whole different world. You know, again, if you look at, I used this analogy last week, look, you're going to have to make fundamentally different decisions. You know, 30 years ago, this was a company that employed probably 10 times the number of workers that it does right now. Obviously, there's a mindset change that has to go on, and I think that's what they'll look for in a board of directors.
Do you think they have to come from the auto industry per se?
Well, no, I don't. I don't think that's necessary. No, I think that having people that understand how to run a good business means running a good business regardless of what you're doing. Yes, sir.
Yep. Following up on this, you said that the company is now free to make fundamentally different decisions, but I think the question is, what if they don't? And adding to that the president has an obligation here. If he's spending $30 billion or $50 billion of taxpayer money, he has an obligation to make sure that money is well spent. So if they make a decision he disagrees with on a line of cars or anything else, doesn't he have an obligation to taxpayers to make sure that decision is a good decision?
He has a strong obligation to ensure that there is a management structure in place that is making smart business decisions.
And if they're not?
I think we covered an example about 2 months ago of the president and the auto task force thinking that GM might not have made business decisions that were so good in the past. But again, this isn't. But Chip, you know, is the president going to thumb through engineering reports and each page of the annual report? No.
I'm asking basic fundamental
I'm simplifying
this question.
helpful service I provide from the podium.
Big decisions on what lines of cars, what to go with. What if he simply disagrees?
Well, I think
they're making bad decisions, and he has an obligation to make sure the tax dollars are well spent.
The obligation is to find people to manage General Motors when it emerges from bankruptcy as a different company.
So it sounds like you're saying the leverage here isn't in getting in there and changing decisions. It's if he doesn't like the decisions, he can change the people.
Well,
like he did 2 months ago.
Look, I think again we will, as we stated in our principles, have a limited role, but vote on corporate governance issues. I think the president and the auto task force are aware of what's involved and what's at stake, and the need to get a strong management team in there that can get this company to viability.
And if I could follow up on the question about Congress, you said it's a hypothetical. It's a lot of steps in a hypothetical. But I don't think it's hard to imagine that members of Congress, now that the government owns 60% of GM, would start saying, "Hey, we have a role here," and start lobbying GM to build things in particular places. Or to, make other decisions. I mean, it's not hard to imagine that Congress is going to start lobbying behind the scenes GM to do things in their states or do other things that they would like them to do. Will the president get actively involved in keeping Congress's fingers out of the mix?
I'm reminded that just last week you guys were asking me questions about Congress complaining about not being involved enough, and now you're presenting me with situations where they would be overly involved in those decisions. I guess I'll come back on any given week to whichever scenario we're pursuing at that time. Chuck.
Okay, Robert, quickly on this exit strategy. Will the administration deliver? You talked about that the president wouldn't thumb through annual reports, but at this point, isn't the government responsible for delivering an annual report to taxpayers? Sort of how this money is being spent.
When
profitability is hit. Will you report to taxpayers? So you go, okay, every 6 months, this is the status of our investment in GM, and will this be a very publicly, a regular thing that we're going to see reported upon?
I don't know what other than normal corporate communications that are done is that every company does. Bill's not going to work for GM, not that I'm aware of. Do you want to talk to me afterwards?
All right. How about this? Is the government stake always for sale? If somebody, an investor, comes in and comes to the federal government and says, "Hey, we know you own 60%. We'd like to buy some of those shares, and you'll turn a profit." Some of the taxpayer money. Is the government stake for sale?
I think if the president was convinced that we had taken the steps to put the company on a path toward viability, and that we could recoup for investors, meaning the taxpayers in this case, their investment in ensuring that GM is continuing to take those steps, the president's eager to get out of any ownership stake in the auto companies.
Right. Nobody could come.
If you want to buy Chuck, we can talk after this.
You just said when it's viability, so obviously
I think right now, Chuck, if there were today there were a lot of buyers, I think we'd be having a different discussion.
Fair enough. Quickly on North Korea, Defense Secretary Gates seemed to hint that the United States would hold North Korea accountable if they were involved in trading nuclear materials sort of across their border. Does that mean nothing is ruled out at that point, that the United States would act unilaterally?
I don't want to get into from here what steps would be on the table or could be taken. Obviously, we continue to watch what's going on in North Korea. Again, in many ways, their actions were predicted by them, by telling us that they were going to do a series of these things, and they've done those things. Again, I think as Secretary Gates and others have said, they're continuing to take steps that isolate themselves from the community of nations. We'll continue to watch, and obviously we're concerned that as they work to develop weapons and work to develop delivery systems, you're always concerned about proliferation. That's why
that's the red line in this case. Well, more so than what they're doing.
Well,
in the country.
I don't want to absolve the North Koreans of any of their actions. I think they're all serious violations of their responsibilities and responsibilities that they've agreed to. But obviously, I think the greatest concern of anybody would be taking these weapons and delivering to somebody, delivering them to somebody to use.
The president agrees with the defense secretary. This isn't a crisis.
I think that we agree with the defense secretary that even as the defense secretary himself would tell you, we're watching the situation closely. But I think, as I've said from here a number of times, I think it does not make sense to provide North Korea repeatedly with attention that they desire by making a series of irrational international decisions. Jonathan, you want to follow? Go ahead.
How personally involved is the president in this issue right now? Can you tell us how often he's been briefed on North Korea?
Let me check. I want to say they were let me check on this before I get too far. The schedule from last week, the end of last week, blurs. Obviously, a series of meetings have been continuously held off and on for many weeks on this issue. The president obviously gets regular updates. So, Jonathan.
Robert, are you going to tell us how much the president and the first lady's date night cost on Saturday night? And if not, why not?
Well, Jonathan, I think is let me as I thought it was the air conditioner. Now no, it's the helicopter. I think spokespeople have spoken to this over the weekend, that the president would, had he or could he, based on the Secret Service, he would have taken the shuttle. I would say that the costs are proportionate with travel for presidents, and I would encourage you to look up previous coverage on travel costs, because they're analogous.
But is there any precedent for a president and first lady to take an out-of-town date night like this, not connected to an official or even a political previously planned event?
You've got probably more researchers than I do. Yes, sir.
You've got a dozen or so cabinet secretaries and others fanning out tomorrow to some of these auto-producing states. What are their talking points, especially to auto workers who may not be too thrilled to sacrifice for the common good, as the president argued today?
I'm going to have him talk to Chip. No, look, in many ways, and I talked about this last week, 700,000 jobs have been lost in Michigan since the beginning of this decade, in a little more than 9 years. The auto industry has seen a tremendous, in a sense, it has seen some restructuring before we got to the point of some serious restructuring, even before bankruptcy. As I've said, GM employs about 10% of the people that it employed just 30 years ago. But I would say to you that the president, obviously the cabinet, many of the cabinet, Ed Montgomery, who the president has specifically tasked to deal with communities and elected officials, the president is asking those to go out into those communities to listen, to see what, to make sure that people know what's available in terms of retraining, in terms of help on their behalf, in making sure that they have the benefits that they deserve. But what I would also say is, you know, again, the other path that the president didn't choose is not some losing their jobs, but all losing their jobs. And the president made some tough decisions to give GM and its workers and the communities it supports a fighting chance to be the GM of old again. Yes, sir.
The GM board, will the White House be suggesting names?
I can check with those guys. I don't know whether that's the case. Well, I think that was sort of similar to earlier.
It's just a question of whether or not you'll be appointing actual and you'll be voting your slate on the board of directors.
Well, let me check in terms of whether we have candidates or not. I assume that we will be involved in finding names of people that we believe as we have done on with other companies that have received extraordinary assistance in both this administration and previous administrations to find people that we think represent good management.
Okay, so the criteria will be good management. Will there be any bipartisan consideration there?
Well, I think what you pick on a board of directors are people, regardless of their politics, who can make hard-nosed business decisions and turn a profit. That's what you want a company to do. We're not checking voter registration. We're looking for good managers. Yeah.
Robert, I may have missed this. How many will be on the board of directors? What's the total number?
I don't have that number in front of me.
Does anyone on Jen?
I'll get it.
Okay. And as I understand it, the administration of the task force will name or suggest all but two. Canada will have one, and the UAW VIVA will have one. The rest will come from the task force. So the administration, through the task force, will play a substantial role and voice in creating this new board of directors.
Right.
And will the administration retain the right to remove members of the board of directors based on GM performance as they evaluated on behalf of the U.S. taxpayer?
Yeah, let me just, I will double check exactly on, I just want to make sure that I have that going forward, but I'll check on that.
In the as this bankruptcy process was put together, the administration was in favor of getting a declaration from General Motors that it will not import for sale in the U.S. market automobiles manufactured in China. Correct?
That
was part of the deal, and I just want to make sure the task force was interested in obtaining.
I don't know about that aspect of the deal, so let us check on that.
Was the task force in favor of General Motors committing to the production of a new small car for the U.S. market to be produced here in the United States?
I don't have that level of detail on the deal, so let me.
Well, these are all part of the detail that were announced last night that were part of the fact sheet. It just seems to me that those are significant decisions made by this new GM, that it would seem the task force would have had some voice.
Let me take a look more closely at what you're
saying. The bottom line of this question is maybe it won't have day-to-day operational supervision going forward, but clearly the task force, it appears, was involved in some very significant General Motors decisions relating to the U.S. market, a product line that doesn't exist now that it is committed to creating. I just want to make sure that I understand correctly that those were task force involved.
Let me check. Look, I don't think it takes a task force to understand that the company's got to make cars that are going to do better fuel efficiency-wise.
His remarks said that there will be an enlarged amount of U.S. production of vehicles. The only way you get there is by the General Motors committing to make this new small car in the U.S. market.
Well, I think
and
General Motors...
that's an outgrowth of these talks.
Well, I think General Motors put out a press release Friday denoting that, from what I saw, denoting that a factory would, at some location in the United States, be chosen for that production. Past that, I will check on that with Jen.
Does the president expect GM to be profitable by the end of his first term?
You know, again, I think that I think it would be unwise for me to speculate. I think the president believes a number of factors are important: getting in place that good management, ensuring that we have a strong and stable economy. Obviously, The biggest determining factor in profitability is going to be the number of auto sales. So ensuring that we have an economy that is strong and robust, where people are buying cars, is going to be the largest determinant as to profitability and how quickly we can get out of the business of being involved in auto companies. Yes, sir.
Yes, Secretary Geithner's in China, and he's telling audiences that the United States plans to reduce its debt. Is the administration concerned that the Chinese demand for U.S. debt is declining?
No. I think we've said up here many times that we have the deepest credit markets in the world. Obviously, the president has long been concerned about fiscal responsibility, but believes that is not concerned about that right now. No.
Just a quick follow. In making decisions about when to start reducing the debt, particularly out years of the budget, what is the White House looking for in terms of economic indicators or legislative benchmarks that are going to prompt you all to start revisiting some of these numbers and bringing them down?
Give me examples of what you're...
For example, the period we're in now, obviously there's a lot of almost emergency spending taking
right.
place to fill in demand. Once that is finished,
right.
I imagine if you're serious about reducing out your budget numbers, you're going to revisit the budget and those figures. What will prompt you to do that? When will you know it's time to do that?
Economically, you mean?
Exactly.
Well, I think this is obviously an ongoing process. I think it's hard to pick in the future some mythical date certain, but I think you've heard the president discuss on a number of occasions and the reason why we thought a recovery and reinvestment plan was important was to get money into the hands of American citizens, to get money to states that were struggling, to ensure that those that were displaced and losing their job had the type of benefits that they deserved, and that one of the ways to get control ultimately of our deficit is to get our economy growing again. So without having sort of a firm graph of numbers, obviously we need to see some concrete economic growth and job growth is equally as important.
When I mentioned legislation, I meant healthcare reform and energy reform, two things that you're hoping to, that you say will lead to long-term savings. Once those are passed, will you have a better sense?
Well, I think, again, we've talked about it on a number of occasions, and I would reemphasize again, getting our healthcare costs under control, making the system dramatically more efficient, over the long term will provide a huge change in our budgetary outlook as we struggle with rising healthcare costs. I think the same is true as we create the jobs of the future to deal with energy independence. So obviously, short term, and then I'd say probably medium to long term, creating that strong foundation in order to get the economy going again. Mark?
Robert, oil prices hit $68 a barrel today, very substantially up in recent weeks.
Right.
When the president goes to Saudi Arabia, is he going to talk to King Abdullah about that? Is he going to express concern?
Well, we'll have a readout exactly of what's done and said in the meeting, but as I said last week, I assume that's something that will indeed be on the docket next later this week. Sorry, I'm getting my weeks.
Robert, one question.
Hold on one second. I appreciate the certainty with which you you said that.
I also wanted to ask about the Cairo stop. Since we talked to you last week about that, with schedules more firm, is the president going to be meeting with any dissidents?
We'll have more on that as we get closer.
Robert.
Yes, ma'am.
You have gone out of your way to reassure people that the government isn't going to be micromanaging and they're not going to be picking the paint colors.
People have given me the opportunity to do that. Yeah.
But, I mean, you could look at it come at it at a completely different way, which is when you own this much of a company and you are representing the taxpayers, you have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that this company turns a profit as soon as possible, and that might behoove you to get as involved as you need to be to make sure that happens. So I'm wondering if you can imagine times when the
the goal of making GM profitable as fast as possible conflicts with the goal of it being the kind of car company that you might want it to be. I mean, what if it turns out that they can sell more big gas guzzlers, at least in the near term, than
I see no present evidence that would make that theory plausible.
Well, if they're restructured and get rid of all the kind of dead weight and they're leaner and meaner, I mean, it's possible that some of the profitable things...
The company, not the cars.
Yeah, the company. That's
well,
what I'm talking
again,
about.
Well, again,
when you're the owner of a company, making a profit for the taxpayers and maintaining a, quote, viable U.S. auto industry sometimes will come into conflict.
I actually don't know that that's the case, given, again, I think if you take a look at, auto sales for the past many, many months, go back a year or two, I don't think you would say we didn't end up in this place because these companies were doing great and we wanted them to do greater. I think if Hummer was a brand that was turning a big profit, it wouldn't be for sale for anybody that has $5 in loose change to buy it.
So you're just saying those two things right now are one and the same. But to follow up on Chuck's question, if somebody came in next year to buy out your share, returning a profit to the taxpayers, and then proceeded to kind of dismantle GM, still would have given a profit to the taxpayers, but the end result would have been, you know, a non-viable U.S. auto industry. I mean, those are choices that you're going to have to make as a major owner.
Let me just address this for a second, Mara, because what the scenario you're setting up is somebody would want to come in and pay markedly more than what the stock price is once we purchase it. They want to give us more than that, establishing that difference as being the taxpayer profit. And assuming that they're making a rational decision about how much to pay for each share of that stock, they're then going to make business decisions that are in the opposite of that in order to make the company less viable.
I think the most profitable thing you can do is sell off the parts of a company. That's all.
Look at the scenario outlined by your question, I think in many ways what the scenario I just outlined is exactly what you outlined. I don't know of anybody that's going to come pay twice the share price and go back to making the decisions that got the company into $172 billion in debt. I guess I'm straining to understand your scenario.
Is there any acknowledgement that sometimes there can be a conflict between representing the taxpayers as their investor, which is what the U.S. government is right now, and doing things that you would like the U.S. auto industry to do or be?
But
you don't see any.
Riddle me with an example.
Michael Moore came out this morning and he said, look.
I'm sorry, what?
Michael Moore,
I've heard of him, yeah.
Roger Rabbit or whatever. came out.
Not exactly,
Roger,
but yeah, I guess.
Roger and me came out and said, look, if it is in the United States' interest to retool these plants so that we make high-speed railroads, railroad cars, that we make public transportation automobiles that will carry more people and use less, less fuel, et cetera, and we should retool the GM plants to do that. Now, that's sort of the opposite of what her question is, which is there a way to make this so that it actually not only helps the taxpayer become profitable, but also helps our long-term goals of becoming more green? And would we have an interest in doing that?
Well, again, as I said, there are traditional roles that Congress and the executive branch have played regarding, for instance, as I've said before, corporate average fuel economy, ensuring that there is for the average of a fleet some standard by which it should meet given the mix, given an appropriate mix of different vehicles. But again, going back to Mara's scenario, I just don't understand a scenario where somebody's going to come in and pay more than the company is, more than what we paid for the company in order to make wildly disparate decisions that in some ways are what got the company to where we were, say, last night.
That entity might want to run it just the way the the poor old bad managers did. There's a lot of ways to dispose of assets. Maybe you want to keep a viable U.S.
But what you're saying,
industry
going,
let
me say
no
this.
Matter what.
So what you're saying is you think, you're saying somebody's going to come in and pay, say, twice this year. Hold on, let me do the scenario. Hold on, but let me see if I'm inferring what you're saying. Somebody's going to pay twice the share price, but ultimately decide that selling the factory, basically covering simply your fixed costs. Well, I mean,
aren't you doing a little bit of that in
well,
this kind of
I mean,
structured bankruptcy? Isn't
fairly,
that what it is?
Well, I will tell you this. There's economic theory. I took a few of these classes. I don't mean that in a sarcastic way. But I don't think that.
Clarify that.
Right, yeah, exactly. But I think there are not many people, and the president made a conscious decision about what path to take, right? But if the investment far exceeded the assets, the fixed costs, that would be a terribly irrational business decision. And I think you can assume rightly that the president and the task force made decisions based on what they thought the company could become. Look, guys, this isn't an exercise in perpetuating a company to perpetuate a company just for that sake. That doesn't make any sense, and that wouldn't be rational for taxpayer investment. That's why people are making those decisions.
Robert,
yes, sir.
Related to that, you're not setting up any benchmarks for the investment. Is that correct? And if so, why not?
I'm sorry.
No benchmarks for GM, for the company, steps towards the road to viability that you'd like to see accomplished
well,
1 year, two.
Well, look,
so you're basically playing off what you said, a way to evaluate whether this is working.
Whether or not they've handed me how they're going to enumerate the evaluation. David, I think the notion that we're somehow giving them, writing them a check and then walking away and hoping to come back in 2 years and find a company that's in different shape, I don't think we would be involved in core corporate governance issues like a board of directors if we didn't have some concern about viability. And as I've said and as the president has said, if he wanted to run an auto company, he wouldn't run for president.
There's got to be a trigger here. I mean, I guess that's what we're, I think, there's been six versions of this question.
Yeah, right.
Like, what is the trigger point to which you say, okay, is it the market that will evaluate the price of the government, the share price when they say, the taxpayers...
That's the stock market,
right,
yes.
That's what I'm saying. If the market shows that the taxpayers can get their money back,
right.
Does and that mean,
if
okay, a, we got to get... You, but is
a,
that the trigger?
If there's
the
a good... Well, if there's a good deal, I can assure you, we don't want to... We don't
want
stock
price? That should be the evaluation.
Not on the Dow anymore.
If you, yeah. I would note that for all the questions I've gotten about our actions in the market, I would note the market seems to be doing seemingly well.
That's what
well
we should
today.
Watch.
Well, look, I think we desire to get out of the auto industry as quickly as we can and do it in a way that protects taxpayers. I can't sit here and tell you that when I think, first of all, we're going through a 60 to 90 day bankruptcy. Right. We've got to figure out, and a judge is going to do that, the size, the entity, the scope, and the stock price that you're going to watch, what that's going to do when it spits out the other side. So I think it would be disingenuous for me to speculate or stand up here and say, when it hits 375, then we're out. But I can assure you, again, the president is not looking to
put a sell order.
Yeah, exactly. Check whitehouse.gov.
But I still think the question is, what procedures do you anticipate having in place at the end of the 60-90 period by which the auto task force or anybody else will be monitoring, whether or not intervening, but monitoring what's happening and deciding if things are going in a good or not so good direction?
Well, look, I think, again, part of that is the purview of what we believe will be a strong board of directors that are making decisions to make this company profitable. Yes, sir.
Will the government exercise its authority to remove Fritz Henderson as CEO either now or after the bankruptcy exit? And what's the realistic likelihood that the government will get much of the $50 billion back
there were some officials who said last week that of the first $20 billion that the Bush administration gave, it's not likely to get much of that back.
Well, again, I think it's at the beginning of this process, not based on market implications and such. I think it's important that I not speculate precisely on what that is. Again, simply to say that the investment that was made, you know, it splits out roughly. Some is secured debt, but the bulk of this is equity, because you don't want to take a company that's just come out of massive debt and saddle it with a massive debt under a different name. So that's one of the reasons that we exercised the equity option in this case. All right, Lester, I'm just going to. Here we go.
Very much, Robert. On Thursday, Buckingham Palace announced, quote, neither the Queen nor any other members of the royal family will be attending the D-Day commemoration on June the 6th, as we have not yet received an official invitation to any of these events. And my question, since Queen Elizabeth is the only living head of state who served in the armed forces during World War II, President Obama believes she should surely be officially invited, doesn't he?
He does, and we are working with those involved to see if we can make that happen. Obviously,
wonderful.
She is somebody. Lester, will you please pass that directly to the Queen for me? Thank you.